All right. Episode 9. I just about forgot. I just looked. All right. We're on episode 9 here. Let me get this TV rolling here. We have rolled over to the couch. We are on the couch. Don't know why we ain't been doing this. Should have been doing this a long time
ago. You ain't going to hear no chairs creaking.
Oh, yeah. It's not. We still got to get rolly chairs for our raggedy studio. But we're back. Got the guests. Turkey season's over. All that stuff's kind of out of the way. We're going to get on to doing a lot of episodes. I'm like, literally, it's Thursday. I'm probably going to have this one drop for tomorrow morning. We're going to crank them out, cut the time back on them, just really get on here and ramble about a little bit of stuff. It's coming up, what we're doing, what we're, you know, striving to achieve. Like I said, what's going on, just really.
Talk our way into deer season.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, there's a lot before deer season. I'm thinking about it. But, you know, there's a lot to go on. And I say that because, I mean, shoot, we really only got a month till we can get on there. And if you want to die and go hunt in South Carolina, you can hunt.
I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I told Kale today, we were talking about those buck muffin things, like the new thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said something about, or we were talking about it, and he called me on the phone, and I was like, I looked at my calendar because I didn't even realize it. If that thing lasts over 2 months, like, that's on end of season.
Mm-hmm.
That's on into September. I was like,
you put one out now.
Gosh dang.
Yeah. And these things he's talking about, they this, the local bow shop up by the, up here by the house. Mm-hmm. I say it's close to my house, but, you know, 25-minute ride from here.
Our local bow shop.
Yeah. Grafton Archery's, good bow shop, top tier. I ain't gonna lie. If you're one of those guys that's willing to travel, I mean, if you're out east, it's a little stretch, but if you got from the mountains, maybe even central part of the state, I actually know some folks that do travel, even from like Virginia, South Carolina. Check them out. Colin Darnell down there, he'll hook you up. Real good bow tech. Those boys know their stuff. They love to hunt, all aspects of hunting, but they know their stuff from one up down the other when it comes to bows. But anyway, they got these big, ginormous mineral balls is basically what
they're like
they are.
They're like cow tubs, if you know what I'm talking about.
They're big. I mean, it would be like a number 10 wash tub is what that container looks like. It looks like it looks like
they weigh like 200 pounds.
Yeah, the best way to describe it, I mean, because it literally is a ball, but like, if you've ever seen industrial size cartons of ice cream, like, take like 4 of those and put them in like in a pallet. Like, you ever seen them?
That's
what it looks like. But because you can't.
It's smaller than a cow tub.
I could say a chain tub or a wire tub because you've seen what that looks like. But ain't nobody seen what that looks like when you get a cardboard one with a lid on it.
And we're two old souls sitting on this couch talking about a number 10 wash tub. Yeah. We're the only two our age that know what that is.
I mean, it's that big. It's big. Yeah, this thing is huge. And supposedly it's like, I mean, it ain't the turn of the century or the change of the game, but it's a more longevity use of a mineral site if you're not willing to feed every month or every 2 weeks, because I'm not gonna lie, when they get on the mineral and they find it, son, you're putting feed out once, maybe even sometimes
it's
twice
got,
a week if you're careful.
Corn, molasses, it's got, I read, see, the place we buy protein, place down in Richfield, if you're down that way, Southern Outdoors, check them out. They've got, it's a hardware store, but they've got
those boys
Banks
got
feeders, Banks blinds, Rut huts, like anything you can think of, everything Tacticam's ever made. They're getting all kind of seed. I mean, they've had a bunch of seed, but they're getting all kinds of new brands. Like, if you need anything for wildlife management, they either got it or they can get it. They can sell Antler Extreme Protein, and they actually started
Do they sell that other one that Purina makes, that Pro?
They did sell that. I don't know if they still do. I know they sell
Pro Antler or whatever it's called.
They sell Antler Extreme by the pallet, but what has changed,
I think, is what that one's called that Purina makes.
It's better because I didn't even tell you this, but I hadn't told really anybody. But what they were doing is they were getting the ingredients for, because there's a big mill in Richfield, if you know what I'm talking about. But they were getting the ingredients from Antler Extreme and the bags and just kind of doing it themselves or whatever, because it was like, you know, it was just about as easy as getting it from them, but it's just something they could do since it was out their back door. Yeah. But it was clogging a bunch of people's feeders because they were making it a little bit big. And so now they're getting it on a tractor trailer load straight from Georgia, from Antler Extreme. And, I mean, it is a – I mean, what they were selling is the right ingredients, is the same protein. It's the
just
same –
a better product now.
It's just a way better product now, straight from the source. But anyway, long story short, my dad went down there to get some the other week and seen them things. And he didn't really tell me what was in them because the guy was trying to his friends with the guy who runs it, and he was trying to talk Dad into buying some, and Dad said, if I put one of them out in the mountains, He said the black bears had that thing rolled down the mountain before I got to the house. He said, I don't need none. But he was just saying it was kind of like some mineral and it had some corn. Well, Colin posted the ingredients, and it's a lot more protein than I thought. Like, that's why I was kind of interested in getting one.
But. And the reason I say it's something good, and I mean, if me and Evan decide to get one, which we probably will for South Carolina to try it, I mean, I look at it as a bang for your buck, because I'm telling you, man, if you're one of those guys, and again, we just rolled off turkey season. When it comes to being one of those, you know, we're a little more naturalist when it comes to turkey hunting. Deer hunting, man, I mean, we got it kind of hard around here. You can grow big deer if you walk them, but I'm going to give them every benefit of the doubt because, I mean, around here they got kudzu patches and pine thickets, I mean, and good hardwoods. But like a year like this year, I'm worried about the mass crop a little bit because we've had so much rain this year. I'm scared the oaks ain't going to pop or they're going to drop too early because, I mean, it's brewing up.
I don't think it's going to be great, but I think it's going to be – if we can avoid a hurricane like last year.
Yeah, that early.
Because that early, like Helene, obviously –
I say early. That would be late going into the fall.
It was a late hurricane, correct, but early for mass drop because
we didn't need it. Yeah.
Dropped all the mass at the
mature trees were just starting to get ready to drop because that was literally we were almost in October when Helene hit. It was 20,
yeah, like I was fixing to start hunting acorns, and then they all come out, and there was no like
you couldn't hunt,
and
you couldn't
the progression.
Find a deer.
If you know the progression of white acorns falling, like you know white oaks and some red oaks fall, but there's a lot of like. Northern red oak, black oak, scarlet oak, that's in the mountains, but depending on where you are, it's cherry barks, turkey oaks, blackjacks, all the red oak varieties. They all drop really late, and they're super small. Dudley on Gamekeepers calls them, like it groups them up as the small acorn reds.
That's right.
And they drop later in the year, and they get covered up by the leaf litter, and the deer eat them, don't get me wrong, but they kind of go unnoticed by the deer. And they stay under there and kind of stay preserved. And that is like the turkey's whole diet in January and February because that's the only thing, you know, a turkey can eat then. So it was, I mean, I don't know that I saw necessarily a difference because, you know, I mean, the turkeys were still there. But I'm just saying, like, I know it hurt them to some level because they weren't there.
Yeah, 100%.
But I don't even know where I was going with that. But
talking about just the way it was, the crop, we were on the subject of how the, given the rain we've got so far this year, which according to the state measuring, it's not that extreme, but I swear here in North Carolina, I maybe worked a week out of the whole month of June so far, one full week. It's so sporadic.
I've worked the last two full weeks without any breaks, but see, like, we don't get rained out like y'all do, because when the dirt gets wet, y'all can't work, but like, if it's actively raining, then we can't work, and so we had to, you know, quit and then make it up.
We
some
had a
other
couple
time.
Days it actively rained all day.
All day, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like the end of May and the first 2 weeks of June, we worked so many like broke up weeks and all kind of stuff.
But no, that's what I was getting at. I mean, with the trees, you know, because with stuff like that, I mean, it's a bang for your buck when it comes to that. Like I say, because you know here, we're talking about being naturalists. When it comes to turkeys, for the deer, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt, give them any extra supplements we can. We are guys that plant food plots. Honestly, we've just really gotten big into the mineral stuff. Me and you did it a little bit back in the day, but like we're pretty hardcore on it now, feeding protein, feeding mineral. We used to not be like that, but I'm pretty big on – and I honestly, it's more of – I like doing it just to watch the gains. It's kind of like somebody going to the gym. I like watching the gains happen, you know, because it's like, man, that buck – was nice last year, and then you keep protein in him come next season if he's still around, and you can guarantee it's that deer, man, he'll put on some inches and some mass.
Yeah, and the coolest thing to me is like you say, we always did it. Like I would always throw a trophy rock out in August, you know, like that was going to do something, you know, just because I wanted to. But the last several years I've gotten really big into it, and now I'll preface this saying that protein is an expensive thing. When I mean, it racks up, especially if you've got, you know, multiple feeders running in multiple places, and, you know, you're buying it by the pallet or whatever, but it has been amazing, the difference. And now I know five big hunt clubs. I'm not going to name them or name anybody in them, but Carson knows the same people I'm talking about if I told him, but five big hunt clubs in the Piedmont and going towards the eastern part of the state that started this about 4 or 5 years ago with protein and really amping up mineral and really doing habitat stuff, because and it and the difference it makes, not in, even in antler growth, because you can reach the full potential, but you're never going to get better genetics by feeding something or planting something or whatever. You're always going to get the full potential of whatever genetics are there.
Correct.
And you're not going to shoot out the bad genetics no matter what y'all think.
That needs to be laid on the line at the gate.
But
as we roll into this deer season.
Yeah. But what does happen is everything starts to reach the full potential. Mm-hmm. And not just antlers. I'm talking when a doe has a fawn, for one fawn. Now, a lot of does have twins if you look at your cameras and stuff. A doe for one fawn every day has to eat 20,000 calories.
Correct.
You know how many poison ivy leaves it takes to get to 20,000 calories? Yeah. I mean, it is insane. Yeah. And so if you can do...
If you, can add to that.
If you can add, you're never, Virginia creeper's got more protein than anything that's ever been sold at a store.
Correct.
Kudzu's the same way. Yeah. It's an invasive, but it's super high in protein. But if you have the ability, my belief is you should be doing whatever you can to maximize your property, whether that's, you know, just cutting a few trees and letting a little more browse get in, or going all out with mineral and protein and all this stuff, because the jump that all those clubs I mentioned and my own personal experience, when you feed protein all year, do not, and I repeat, do not expect to you start feeding protein after turkey season, and when deer start growing their antlers, they're supposed to be bigger than it was last year. That is incorrect. But if you pay attention, when that bachelor group comes in there to eat, and then 20 minutes after that, there's a doe with a little buck fawn. If he's been eating that his whole life, then that grows his potential. Mm-hmm. So you don't see the difference until 3 or 4 years in. But once you get to the difference, when a whole generation of deer on your property has been eating it and has had year-round maximum potential of what you can get out of your property, it is insane, the jump that you can get out of it.
Yeah. Now, the health benefits all the way around are what's the biggest plus. Because, like you said, for some people...
Those are so much healthier. Yeah, fawns are healthier.
For the way some people run their habitat management, is anything is good. There's nothing necessarily wrong. But some people will make their place a desert wasteland. And if they're not implementing enough source mm-hmm. of, you know, calories or whatever, diet, you know, quality diet for you know, any wildlife... That costs more money, so it's, you know, just to hit, like you said, sure, we're feeding extra protein, but don't think we're not doing prescribed fire.
Yeah.
Thinning out the, you know, open up the canopy, you know, thinning out the forest floor a little bit, letting some of those more briars, berries, mm-hmm. you know, Virginia
Stump
creeper.
Sprouts, anything.
Even poison ivy, because I don't know if nobody knows this, but 90% of the time when you see where poison ivy grows in most dense populations, that area's been disturbed before. That's how poison ivy grows. Yeah. It's a disturbance reintroduced plant. So when something's disturbed, it reintroduces itself. And that's quality habitat for deer. I can't stand walking through it because I normally get it, and I get it. I don't get it as bad as I used to.
I used to could look at it and get it.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I'm not that way anymore.
And I found that out too. You actually over time develop a tolerance, an immunity to it. Not to where you don't get a rash,
get it,
but you know, it's not severe. But no, it's crazy because there's some people that just, I mean, they'll desert wasteland their place, man. They open everything up and it's too open, and you know, then the next thing you know, they didn't realize they took all the food away. And it's really funny because I say this like I walk around with clients or something and look at property, but like if somebody takes me hunting with them and we go hunting, man, when I'm walking through the woods, I'm looking at the browse line naturally.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm over here flicking a briar, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, look at them briars. They're mowed down.
Yeah.
And then we're walking
everything
by
in here
walking
is eaten.
By these, walking by birch trees, walking by maples. Look at these limbs. Look at these trees. What? They're high as they can be. What do you mean? Look at them. They're 8 foot high. Yeah. As high as a deer can stand on his back, 6-8 foot.
You get down at a deer level, there ain't nothing.
No. Yeah. When you look down, and then the trees, that's when you really know you're stretching it. When you see the trees all pruned back up 6-8 foot
where
high,
a deer standing on his
you
back
got,
legs,
you got problems.
Yeah.
You know, you need to start. Need some food in this place. These deer are starving. Like, just
because
you're hunting a cutover and there's a thicket right here, don't mean crap. These deer are just coming back and forth to bed. You shooting a deer while going home.
Yeah,
he ain't living here. He ain't eating here. Yeah. You know, he's done ate everything to live here. And again, I'm gonna dive down that hole just real quick. I can't remember that guy that did that study. We always talked about this back in the day. I wish I could find it. I'd really put a link to it. It was a very cool study. I don't know how much has been backed up to it since. So, don't take this and run to the bank with it. I just remember it. Given it how much does eat, you know, when they have a fawn, single fawn, a lot of times healthy herds, twins is not uncommon. It's very common. given that she has to implement that much milk until they go to feeding their own self and what she's got. Take those 3 miles when that other two get big enough to eat natural forage, and you think about how much you got to have just to feed 3 deer. Mm-hmm. And let's amplify that to a standard herd on a piece of, I don't know, 20-acre track. Yeah. Let's say 10 deer. Live there. That's a lot of deer.
Yeah, live
That's
there,
a deer
yeah.
per, you know, 5 acres. That's yeah. a lot of deer. So figure that up. You know, mm-hmm. that's a good bit. And I wasn't quite five. It's a little under that. But still,
yeah.
that's a lot of deer on 20 yeah. acres. So
and that's,
how much food can you produce? And sometimes you can't do but so much.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So being cautious how you run your habitat management to a sense of doing what we're originally the conversation was talking about, feeding protein, the benefits are there. So don't bash it till you try it. Because, again, you're not going to mm-hmm. see turnkey results. But for that up-and-coming generation of deer,
yep.
I will admit, you're going to bring in more deer. Because when deer are grouped
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
and
you're
going to
bring in more deer.
When deer, I mean, they're herd animals. When deer are herding real hard in the summer, all the does are together. All the bucks mm-hmm. are together. And they're bacheloring up, you know, partying it up, hanging out in groups. I mean, I got a spot right now. I got protein out,
mm-hmm.
and I got 8 bucks that stand there every single evening. You know how much? And I'm talking youngest buck in there is probably 2.5.
Yeah.
The other, I know I showed you that one, that real wide deer. He's probably 4.5, 5-year-old deer.
Yeah.
Them other deer, good solid 3, maybe 4-year-old deer. I'm going to tell you one thing. Mowing that protein down. I can't keep it in there. Can't keep it in there. And I'm worried to death about drilling for beans. Because I know what I'm going to have to do, and I don't like doing it. I'm going to have to finish the food plot off.
Yeah.
And then what? Wait to hunt mid-season, late season, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing I don't like about beans is the problem with beans is when they get ankle high and the deer mow them down.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
That is – that state – well, it's the reason I don't like them because I like to see a result out of something or – I like to be able to hunt over something if I'm going to do it. Now, I don't hunt over protein feeders, but you get what I'm saying.
No, yeah, those are
so
just, yeah, I'm saying we don't do
when
that.
When a soybean is ankle high, that's the highest it's ever going to get in protein. So when they come down and mow them beans down, that's really the best thing for the deer, but it does you no good.
100%.
And so that's why I just
and see, and that's
beans.
And I'm gonna you know, pinch off this a little bit because – you know, Dr. Grant Woods with Growing Deer used to talk about this all the time, and a lot of other guys, the biologists, talk about this too. If you take into consideration fencing it in and letting them, you know, brown out like they do it in the year, they're full of carbs. So they change from protein to carbs when they're not green
like
to when they
dry. It's like
a field
of corn.
Correct, correct. But I'm going to be honest with you. You might can do that in the Midwest when you have about a 10-acre plot to do that, and you can section hunt it or whatever.
As soon as you take
but
that fence down,
but I
get ready for it to leave.
I can't section hunt an acre plot in North Carolina, even if I broke it up and had Egyptian wheat to split the plot or fenced half and fenced the other. I mean, I could keep deer out of it, but I promise you, by that time of year when I open that fence back up to hunt, I doubt it's going to work. Is it worth a try? Absolutely, and I'm thinking about trying it.
Oh, yeah.
But I just kind of know my benefits. You take that prop, that 1 acre, we're just making an imaginary square. One plot I got's an acre.
Yeah.
But you imagine it being a perfect square, and you divide it half acre and half acre. You let them eat that 1 half acre down and hope they still keep coming around to that plot, whether you drill something back in it or not. When all of it's done and it's time to go to carbs to bulk for winter, and you open them up to that fence, they'll eat that half acre in the night.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't even get cold enough here in North Carolina. They're just lazy. The deer just eat around here. They're
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going going through rugged winters like the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this past year we had a pretty good winter. I ain't going to lie. It got cold.
Yeah.
But in most years.
I've been seeing a bunch of all black woolly worms, too.
These times in December, it'd be 70 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be hot. We'd be
wearing shorts. Yeah, this past winter is the first time I deer hunted in the snow since I was like 13.
I mean, it was cold. We had a good cold snap. I was actually gone. We had the best cold snap here. But it was cold out in the Midwest when I was out in the Midwest.
Yeah, when I sent you the video of that buck walking in the snow.
Yeah. It was cold out there. It was 22 a couple of days out there. But, no, that's the thing. I mean, because I don't disagree with you. The only downfall is, I mean, we've talked about this a million times. We talked about this before we had this podcast. We were talking about what you were doing a couple of weeks ago or last week up here in the mountains. It's hard to find the most ideal package here in North Carolina to really, really plant and keep deer. Because, I mean, I'm not saying out in the Midwest they don't, but, like, you know, right there where our lease is at and everything that gets planted year to year and how they rotate with crops and what they want, I just noticed this year everybody's picking wheat right now because finally it's stopped raining. There's either corn. Corn's actually not that heavy right here. Everybody's putting beans in the ground this year around here. except right up the road right here. Right up the road this year, they got more corn than I've ever seen on the ground.
And there's a bunch of corn up north of here where I've been working.
Yeah.
That's the most corn I've seen up there in a while.
But now that, on years like that, it's almost made me think, because I've always thought of this and never done it, because, again, size-wise, we're getting into bigger food plots than what you've ever dealt with. We've always dealt with small stuff. When I say small, guys, we're talking quarter-acre plots. Yeah, like little plots, not even half-acre plots. Yeah. And we're dealing now with acre plots, acre and a half, two-acre plots, like decent-sized stuff for something for me and Evan. Really just only have, like, a stand on one north end and a stand on the south end or something like that. But anyway, I'm curious to see, you know, how that would turn out with corn in the area, how it would change deer up, you know, deer pattern, deer movement, knowing how long they take to cut corn around here versus how it's cut in, you know, feed states or states where it's a commodity crop. Here it's just, heck, I'm going to grow 20 acres of corn, cut
and
it, and take it
to the
feed
mill. Up in the
mountains,
too, it's kind of a old school thing, I guess, but there's a lot more old school farms up there.
They're just picking
that,
it.
Well, no, that big field below the house there, that big long bottom field right there, or the field that is a very long bottom, it's in beans, or no, it's not in beans, it's in wheat right now, but the last 2 or 3 years, and the farm over there where we used to turkey hunt over down the road, they've planted that in silage corn, feed cows. You know, so it ain't even really, I mean, they're cutting it green and the rows are 6 inches apart or however long, you know, 8 inches apart, whatever they plant silage corn to, they're planting it for the stalk, so it really don't even make that big of a difference. Like, you see a cornfield in the mountains, or right around us in the mountains, there's a bunch of big cow guys up there. And you're like, oh, they planted corn there, And then you get to looking at it, and it's like, well, that's silage corn.
Yes, the rows are way too tight.
Yeah, what rows are tight, and they ain't trying to make no ear, you know, it's just
like
a stalk.
Do like my Ken does, you know, he plants it, and then he picks it, and puts it in his own feed mix for his cows. I don't know.
But I will say this.
I'm curious about that, though.
Too far down the topic about like disturbance and all this stuff, and I'll talk sometime about what we're doing in the mountains, but I've always said this, and I'll translate this to any property, 2 acres or 100 million, whatever, if you manage the and I think it's finally starting to shift, if you listen to the way the hunting industry's going, and you know, turkey population's declining and stuff, like I think it is starting to shift, but for so long, everybody who quote unquote managed property was managing for big bucks, which is wrong to me, and it is wrong, because if you're managing for a place to hunt big bucks, then you can, or strictly for that with nothing else in mind, then you're never really going to get it because you're not doing the right stuff, and two, it just doesn't really work because you might get one big buck a year or something, but there's 150-inch deer living in South Park Mall. Like, a deer, it's the genetics in the area, but if you start managing, if everybody would do this, it would change the world. If everybody managed, now we rabbit hunt, but everybody don't rabbit hunt, but just for the two that everybody does, if you managed for turkey nesting and turkey habitat in general and fawning habitat, the big bucks and all the turkeys and all the rabbits and all the other stuff come with that in great numbers, because you up the carrying capacity of everything, because you're supplying more food, more early successional habitat, and all the stuff. Like, everybody had this thing for the longest time. It's like, oh, I'm just going to grow a big deer. I'm going to put out a trophy rock and clear out a 700-yard shooting lane and slick down everything
leave everything.
And then,
bed,
you know, the first week of the rut, the big buck might stroll through there and they think it's working, but that's all you're going
to
get.
Honestly, I'm one of those people, too, like, to a degree. I care more about carrying deer capacity to a degree. Like, I do like the idea of, you know, obviously you do a herd check every year.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I need to take 6 does off his property. I do it all the time because I promise you, you're going to get that back, sometimes if not double that back in the coming year.
Yeah.
But I'm always looking for that quantity. I mean, I want deer in general. I don't care if my property's full of 3-year-old bucks. If they stay around enough, just say I got 5 3-year-old bucks to stay around that property. I mean, you've seen it, because I've shared stuff with you my whole life since I've been hunting that 100-acre track. It'll be full of, you know, there'll be 5 6 3-year-old bucks in there, and he's one. He's been hanging around now. We got tabs on him. If he shows up this year, this is no lie, folks. If the deer ever gets harvested, I may post a picture of him if he decides to go disappear this year. But if he shows up, We ain't posting a picture of him until he's dead.
Yeah.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. That deer, I'm sending him off. He's got to be 7 years old or better. I mean, that deer,
I think he's
old.
Eight. We've always argued about that. I think that deer's eight. If he's alive right now, this deer season, he'll be 8.5.
I mean, that deer is stupidly old.
Because the deer your dad shot was 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the same age. If I think he was a year older.
Well, that was a year after that deer. They both showed up. Dad killed his in 23.
Yeah, I know that. I'm saying the deer your dad killed, me and your dad aged him when my dad caped him out. He was 4.5. And I think the deer you're talking about was a year older, which would make him 5.5, which would make this year he's 8.5.
Yeah.
If he's still around.
Yeah, he's a, that's a cool story with that deer. We got a,
yeah.
I'd like to close that chapter on that deer. And bonus, while we're on that subject, my dumb butt forgot to put in for the draw for Kansas. So I didn't even get drawn for Kansas. I forgot all about it because I was trying to plan turkey trips and didn't put in for it. Everybody got drawn and was like, did you get drawn? I said, yeah, let me go look. Didn't even put in. I forgot. Slap forgot. So I'll be hunting home pretty hard this year. And I may try to go to Ohio now that I have that opportunity available. But it falls around my oldest daughter's birthday, so I don't know if I can make that happen. But if I don't,
when they go, I don't
really care because I'm going to probably grind it out here. And I might try to put my tail back in South Carolina pretty hard if we get anything showing up. We got to get down there and get some work going.
We ain't got nothing out. Two cameras is dead, and one is
you can't
just
tell nothing right now.
Yeah.
We killed 140-inch deer down there last year. We said we're done.
Yeah. We're done with this place. We've done all we need to do.
Killed a 120-inch six-pointer and a friggin' 140-inch 12-pointer. We're done.
Yeah.
We gave up, guys. Mm-hmm. Nah, but,
and that's another, talking about deer old age, if the other buck shows up down there this year, he'll be 7.
That, you talking about that 8-pointer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll be 7.
And that's a big 8.
If, now that deer could be in that part of the world. That deer could be like
really old.
8 or 9.
Yeah.
Because he went downhill this year. He was big, don't get me wrong. Yeah.
If I had a couple more pictures for clarity, because obviously people ain't seen all the pictures I could go through, and I seen that deer on the hoof, the one I was talking about up here at home.
Mm-hmm.
It proves his age when you see the mass he has. Remember that one midday picture I got, like, right before Halloween?
Yeah, he's standing out there in the sun. Plot?
Yeah, wide open, by himself. Mm. I mean, that deer, there's no, we've never laid eyes on deer around here that's got mass like that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, that just shows his age. And then on top of that, he's got a swag back and a gut in, like, late October. And then he did his typical thing. Vanished like a ghost in the night. Mm-hmm. Never seen him again.
And I wish I'd have aged that deer, the 8-pointer, 2 years ago, the one I shot across the road in the mountains.
Yeah.
And that evening we found him the next day.
Yeah.
I've got some pictures of it. I know I sent them to you, but it's been, you know, 2 years or whatever. But I actually ran into a guy. There's a place down the road, a big Christmas tree farm, where a lot of deer come out in the evenings in the summer. So it's like, you know, everybody in the Midwest goes looks at bean fields with their binoculars in the summer. But
we're looking at tree farms.
Yeah, I go look at the tree farm. And so the guy that actually hunts that tree farm, and we're friends with him or whatever, and he hunts over there around it. We were talking about it, and he's one. He's like, I always say this too, like, if you can, make friends with your neighbors, and the more y'all can get on the same page, the better everything's going to go, because you ain't hunting the whole world, you know. So, like, the more everybody else is doing. And him and his son hunt, and they're on the exact same wavelength we are. So we always talk about deer. It ain't like those neighbors like, no, I didn't see nothing. You know, it's like, we'll tell him what we saw and what's been going on, and he does the same for us. And anyway, long story short, I talked to him last summer when I was out there looking at deer, because he was like, I was kind of like near his driveway or whatever, and he come pulling out there. I talked to him for a while, and we got talking about that 8-pointer, and he said, did y'all look at the teeth in that deer? And I said, no. And I said, and I regretted it as soon as we tossed him, because I noticed it in the pictures when I was looking at him, and he had a bunch of pictures of him because it was on the same side of the road.
Yeah.
And just the way the deer was acting, he's acting like an old deer. And, you know, when I finally ended up killing him, was like the only time he daylighted was one evening late season in a clover field in the rain. Like, that was the only time he's going to come down there in the daylight and eat. But anyway, he was so, I ain't gonna say he was so old. He wasn't like 8 or 9 or nothing, but he was, I think he was 6, because the way his body everything looked, his brisket was super deep. He had a big head and everything. He was long as a school bus, like all the old, you know, mature deer signs. But on his hips and his shoulders, he was like sunk in. Super healthy, super healthy.
This is in December.
No, I'm talking about when he showed up in like October. I'm saying before the rut, before he got run down.
Yeah.
When he's full mass, he was going to be. Now, when I shot him, he was real run down because he'd been running around for 2 months because I killed him in December. But what I was getting at is like he was fully mature and like past his prime is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because like his shoulders were sunk in, a completely healthy, huge gut, all the old deer, mature deer stuff. But he was sunk in, and me and that guy talked about that a lot. And he's like, I think that deer was – because that deer wasn't like a – I mean, everybody saw what we killed up there this year, and we got a lot of pictures between the neighborhood of some really, really big antler deer. And don't get me wrong, his a hundred and
– that deer was something right in the 30s.
No, he was
– it was because your daddy's 8-pointer was almost 140 inches, or not quite 140.
No, he wasn't. You talking about the 7-pointer? He was like 126.
No.
The one without a brow tine?
He's bigger than that. I said 40. That was very exaggerated. That deer was in the 30s.
If he'd had that brow tine, he'd have been in the 30s. No, he was in the 20s, though, is what I'm telling
you. Your deer was in the 20s.
He was like 118 or 19. He wasn't in the 20s.
You smoking crack. I can't go back that far. That was 2 years ago now.
I ain't smoking crack. But anyway, what I'm saying is on the property and in the neighborhood, there's a lot bigger antler deer. You know what I'm saying? Like, for, like, mature, in their prime, 4.5, 5.5-year-old antler deer that were in the 30s, 40s, and one that was probably breaking in the 50s. And
meanwhile, y'all was spooning crock potting, shooting DeMar's trophies today.
Yeah, and he was 120-inch 8-pointer, and he was past his prime, I'll say.
Oh, yeah. That was a super good deer. Cool. There's one thing about it. I mean, and we're going to sit here and talk about it. Y'all can see it on you won't. We like shooting deer. I mean, we get an itch.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to kill a big buck.
I'm going to kill
and
a buck.
And we do. Mm-hmm. And then we decide, hey, if he trips my trigger, the trigger's going to trip.
Yes, exactly, you know what right. I
mean? And then there's also ones that just, when they plumb grind their teeth, the six-pointer, the big six, South Carolina. He grinded our gears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, check it out on YouTube. That video's actually got a lot of views on it. Evans got a bunch of views on it. Go check them two out.
Mm-hmm.
Them two deer, we didn't have no history with that big six-pointer till that season. But that deer, he played with us so much and made us mad.
We
should have
looked at his teeth, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was 4 or 5.
He made us so mad, both of us, that we was hunting a little more.
I had him within bow range.
Oh, yeah.
A week or 2 weeks before you killed him. Mm-hmm. I had him within bow range in a freaking muscadine thicket, grunting, sounded like something off of Primo's in the 90s, snort, wheeze, and grunting, chasing does, and I never could see him.
Mm-mm.
And, I mean, we hunted that deer
pretty hard.
With everything.
That was the deer before we decided, well, we didn't even know, you know, Big Tim, whatever you want to call him.
We
had no clue he was about.
Well, we had that one picture of him in October, but it wasn't like, hey, this deer's on the radar. It's like, oh, hey, he's still alive.
And
okay,
then literally right before he dies, I know we talked about this at the beginning of the podcast, but he just showed, we had him night pictures, and it was like, all right, time to roll.
Yeah. But, and if anybody knows me, knows I love to shoot deer, but it's all, I like to, it's always weird. I always try to word this the right way.
Moment of silence right there.
But fallen. I love the culture of shooting deer.
Mm-hmm.
Not just shooting them to be killing them. Not, you know, shooting them in the head, splitting their wig, and just going home and not telling nobody.
Hold on. I'm going to cut you off before you even finish because I want to say this as the opposing player on this team here. just because – I'm justifying it for you because I know how people are and you know how people are to you X, Y, and Z. He's probably got asked 10 gazillion times.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you shoot that thing for, boy?
Yeah.
I get asked. Mm-hmm. How come Evan shot that spike and you shot it 8 pointer.
Yeah.
Literally, that's what we did one day. I'm looking at the picture right now, the deer on the dog box. Yeah. But.
Because we got in the dang truck that morning and said, we killing two bucks today. And a 3 pointer come out, and by God, he got a 6.5
that's
Creekmore.
That's what I'm getting at without, like, yeah. You know, and I know you ain't mad or nothing, but that's what I'm getting at. Like,
oh, yeah.
You, in all reality, are probably the only person that keeps that alive because you just said it earlier. What's going on so much in the mainstream world is the idea of let everything walk, shoot the next biggest thing you see. But I'm here to tell you, straight out the gate, we, Evan and Carson, lease 200 acres in South Carolina. Our names are on that lease. What happens on that lease, and I'm not saying nothing illegal, but what happens on that lease is up to mine and Evan's discretion. Mm-hmm. If we go through a season like last year, hey, Bo, we only gonna shoot something out past its ears. A mature buck, let's do what we gotta do. I will say this and put this out there flat on the airwaves. When we first got that lease, we wouldn't shoot nothing. Then we went through a year where we just shot some deer. And I shot a good deer that year, and he shot a few deer. I mean, they was just your typical scrub deer, but it's our lease. We can do what we want. We want to shoot it. We want to burn a tag. We'll burn a tag. Mm-hmm. And then we come down the road 3 years up leading up to it since we've had the lease 4 years, and we've had two back-to-back exceptional years on that lease.
Oh, yeah.
For other reasons other than I'm not saying shooting a small bucks does that.
Yeah.
Our timber's matured. People around us have lost their timber to getting cut over. We've started implementing food plots, more protein feed, you know, moved locations, found where the deer want to be, X, Y, and Z. And that leads up to a lot of...
Yeah, we've learned the place a lot better,
And that leads up to the whole goal of it. But what I was getting at just about him and that he was going on that road... He is the only person, and there are probably other people if I could think of, but it may not be somebody I'm with as much as I'm with this guy, or, you know, like Caleb or any of my other hunting buddies. He keeps the tradition alive of saying, come on, boy, let's hop in the truck. We're going to go shoot us a deer. And you go shoot a deer.
Yep.
And that's what he wants to do. Let him do it, you know, because I'll do it sometimes with him. But most time I'm going to shoot a big old nanny because I just get tired of him sometimes, you know, because that's just me, you know. And if one of them comes in there, a little old buck, and he tries to blow the whole woods apart, all right, boy, you better back off, you know. Something's going to happen.
And it's a big part of me in general is I've kept it alive, and until the day I die, I'm going to keep it alive. But it's the – and I will regionalize, if that's a word, this, to the south. It is the southern – still hunting, deer hunting culture.
It's the way you're introduced to the sport.
Yeah, it's the way. No, I don't understand that. I'm saying like, what I'm doing is what I grew up doing, and that's what everybody grew up doing. But it's what, like, you know, social media and like all the times have changed or whatever. And if you want to go sit in the woods and watch 100 deer walk by, just because you think this one with a 2-inch longer brow tine is cooler, then, you know, whatever. That's fine. I'll do that. I do that. All the time. I do that in the mountains every year. I don't shoot nothing in the mountains. But what I'm getting at is, like, I love the culture of it because, like that morning we shot them two deer. I'm looking at that picture right now. We sat there with them deer on the tailgate, got the wife of the dude running the processor to take our picture, and hung out for 2 hours talking about deer hunting.
There was some other boys down there,
people
too.
Rolling in, drop off a spike. Man, by God, you got him, you know. Or somebody come in with a 97-inch 8-pointer.
Yeah, and we had a big buck and a little buck. Yeah. It was just the whole story of like. Yeah.
Some boys come in with like two does on top of a dog box. I mean, man, do it. And that's what I think we've lost in hunting. That's why I do it, is because the story, I grew up with the best hunting influences I couldn't draw them up better, and everybody knows me knows who all they are, and they've all played a big part in my hunting life. But like, and all of them have got walls and walls and walls full of one of them's got like 8 or 9 things in Boone and Crockett, all different. He's like 11 away from the North American Super Slam, 10 or 11 away. They've all been all over the country, massive elk, record book deer, everything north of 150 inches, like you can think of, all of it. And all that's on the wall, and you walk in there, and you start talking about deer hunting, it's going to be about the time when me and so-and-so used Billy Bob's four-wheeler, and it broke down, and we killed three spikes.
Yeah.
That's the story you're going to hear.
Yep.
And I've always, like, my favorite comedian is Jerry Clower because of stories and, like, the way you can tell stories. And, like I tell that story right there, that picture of me shooting a three-pointer in the rain and you shooting that big buck more than I've told the 140-inch deer I killed. Now, the 140-inch deer is why you get up and go deer hunting.
Oh, 100%.
And what I love the most about it, but... You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, it's all in the story and the culture of it. Like, if we didn't shoot them, if I didn't, like, well, that's a bad example, but.
No, it ain't. Like, it's
well,
the same
it's
way.
A bad example of what I'm fixing to say because you ended up killing a deer. But, like, this instance for me, this on YouTube, it's got a bunch of views, I think. When I shot that little scrub eight pointer, I texted you that night, hey, I'm going to South Carolina. If it's got antlers and more than about 3 points, I'm ready to shoot something. It's the first day of November. I ain't even seen an antlered buck on the hoof besides Del Rio when he slipped me in bow season. I was like, I'm killing something today. And so I shot that buck, hung out, shot him, put some corn out, did a little bit of stuff on the property, went to the processor, hung out for, you know, 45 minutes talking to people, whatever. And if I had not shot that deer, I'd have been like, well, I didn't see nothing but a little old eight-pointer, and go back home. And that's what I hate about, like, the way of hunting has gone.
And you don't shoot something every time you go. I don't want nobody to perceive that the wrong way. Because there's times I do that. I saw a couple little bucks, you know, whatever. Because when you got that mode, you go.
The last day of the season, I seen that one. I know he's 4 year old, and he ain't never going to be no bigger. And if I see him this year, I'm going to shoot him the first time I see him. That high, narrow, it's like seven-pointer, and his points are crooked. And that one's like flat. You know, when that big brow buck was showing up, like, you know, 125, 130-inch deer was showing up, I was hunting him. And now, the rest of the season, I said all year, every time that deer would show up on camera, that scrub I'm talking about, because he's over 200 pound. I mean, he's a big old ugly, just swamp scrub buck. I said, if I see that deer, I'm shooting him. I watched him, like, he crossed that power line, like, seven times that morning. I didn't care. I mean, you know, my mind was set on shooting the big buck.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I like that, and I'm going to throw this story out there because I highly ever doubt we'll get J-Dub on the podcast. But talking about that same thing, like, the, you know, doing it, and I'm using this example because I've always looked at it this way. When he went up to Illinois, and back then they didn't have nowhere to hunt, so they went with an outfitter. And, you know, the outfitter told him, he said, Dad went and hunted this spot, and he kept seeing these deer funneling this thicket. And I'm telling this story just so everybody knows where it boils down to. It boils down to the same thing Evan was talking about. Because you'll always do that, and it always could be something better, like everybody makes it out to be.
Yeah.
But sometimes if you never take a chance, you won't ever have a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those stories with all the younger deer are good. But this one always sits good with me, because in some people's books, they don't – like me and you, we take whatever we can get sometimes, and we're happy with all of them, you know. But anyway, they went and hunted with this outfitter. He was hunting this spot, kept seeing these deer go to this thicket. He come back, asked the guy at the outfitter, he said, what about hunting that spot? He said, you don't want to hunt there. It's nasty, ugly. That ain't where the deer want to be. Well, he saw otherwise. He said, I'm going there to hunt. He went and hunted by the edge of it. First 140-inch buck walked by. He gored him. Dad said, when that happened, he said, I'm pumped. I'm excited. He said, I still had about an hour and a half of daylight left. He said, in that time, hour and a half of daylight, the same trail that buck walked out on, he said, a second buck come out that was pushing 70s. And he said, when that third buck come out, he said, he only had half a rack. And he said, half that rack, if he'd had the other side, he said, that deer would have pushed probably in the 80s. He said, and that's how it goes. But that story tells good. I get it's 140-inch deer. Some people hunt their whole life, never kill that. But some people, they will walk 140-inch deer in hopes that that would happen. But what would have happened had he walked that first 140? The other two deer may have never showed up. And then you let a 140 walk out of your life. And, you know, you went all the way to another state to hunt. And then you get beat up by the locals or something. Oh, man, I'd have let that and walk, you know. Screw that, man. It's my tag, my license. Again, we talk about it all the time, just like with the turkey season stuff. But turkey season's a little different. You got Jakes and you got Longbeards.
Yeah.
Let's make a proper choice. Sure, you got spikes and you got mature bucks, but I promise you, deer density ain't slouching across anywhere in the United States at all. But I give you kudos for that. It was a pretty good topic you brought up there, because that's something that is true. And, I mean, I'm here to vouch for him. He's a dying breed, because ain't a lot of folks that do that. We know a couple old-timers that are still like that.
Yeah.
And we don't even use the cliche saying, and I'm calling it cliche because it is, and I don't want to care what anybody says. there ain't many people out in this world that are slap hunting for putting food on the table. So we can just let that fly away in 2025, because I'm here to tell you.
We eat deer 365 days a year, but if I never shot a deer, we wouldn't starve.
No. So I'd like that to, you know, just quit being the gossip. I've tried bowling them antlers, and they don't get no softer. I don't care, Bo. Throw them behind the shed. Hang them up on the building outside. I don't care what you do. But don't be the, you know, pot calling the kettle black when it's just, well, I shot that spike, you know, because I'm out here to hunt for meat. Man, I'm out here to hunt for meat, too, because I promise you, ain't an ounce of that deer go to waste. No. None of it goes to waste. I mean, if I decide I don't want to eat nothing or make a roast out of it, the whole son of a gun gets turned into deer jerky. Mm-hmm. And I know that's wasting good meat, but when I got plenty in the freezer from a couple of those.
It ain't getting wasted.
Yeah, I'm gonna eat it regardless, you know what I mean? So, eat everything on them but the guts and the hooves, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's just funny. And, I mean, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because it's a good justification, but you don't owe nobody no justification, because you do what you want. And I say that because there's more leniency to it in the deer hunting world, because here's the thing. We ain't never hunted over a deer decoy, none of that crap. We just hunting in a food plot. And, again, we do hunt over corn. It's legal here in the South. I've shot big bucks around corn piles. Honestly, the longer I can remember, I think the only big buck I have physically ever killed over corn was that first big bow buck I killed in Kentucky. That deer snuck in on me after a rainstorm because he was just trying to find something to eat because it had rained. Yep. I mean, like a cow pissing on a flat rock. And he showed up, and he had no clothes in the world, and I gored him. That's like the only physical big buck I've ever shot with his mouth in a corn pile.
Yeah.
Because like that deer right there we're talking about, he was cruising by looking for a hot doe below a skint corn. There wasn't nothing there.
Yeah.
That big six, he was coming there to eat dirt and molded corn. I didn't even let him get his head down to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that ain't me justifying not doing it, because I promise you, I've gored plenty of deer over one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And as long as it stays legal, I'm going to do it, because it's just for the fact that if you put corn out, now if I was hunting in somewhere like big fields or something, then I might still put out corn to get pictures or something, but it ain't that big a deal. But that 200 acres we got ain't nothing but 200 acres of pine thicket with a couple openings on it. If I didn't have a corn pile out, then that doe, that 140 that was chasing, wouldn't have come there to eat, and I'm probably never seen him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all, I've never understood the argument against putting out bait. On that sense. Now, I mean, whatever you think, but I've never understood it's like cheating. Like, mature bucks just don't walk up to a corn pile and eat corn at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, they just don't happen.
Because I'll give you a story, just because I never talked about it. When I killed that big nine in Kansas back in 22, I hunted that same location when it was dry and even when we corned it back. But the thing about it is, had the hot doe not coming there to try to grab her a late night bite, because I'm telling you, it got down to the wire when I had to shoot that buck. Who's to say he would have never cruised by there? He wasn't going to come in there to eat corn. That wasn't what was on his mind. Yeah. That doe brought him out of the woods to do what? She was coming to feed, and that was enough time for him to say,
yeah,
I got you where you stand, and I'm coming to get you. And he just happened to cross my path. I could do that on a hot trail, a travel trail, whatever you want to do. And I've done that. Me and you both have done that. We've killed deer off of natural food sources. We've killed them completely off food sources, hunting travel corridors, main trails. Man, just before we even go crazy and down any more holes, we'll just stop it on this one right here. We went one day, and South Carolina was terrible on our lease. It was hot. The deer wasn't eating nothing, wasn't eating no corn, and it was getting to us where we were like wanting to shoot them over corn because they were there in cameras enough. We should have seen them. We said, screw that. We went and found natural sign, old school, set on the ground, and went and shot a doe in a thicket on a piece of public in South Carolina. Lord knows if them deer wouldn't have tried to bust us, we'd have saw that day. Because I'm talking, we were sitting over top of about 12 scrapes.
I have convinced myself of this. I don't know if he'd have been there before dark, but I am 99.9% sure most of them scrapes belong to that big six. The more I think about it, and the more I look at the map and the routes he was taking and where he was showing up on our land.
Yeah, that's where he was coming from.
I mean, there's definitely more bucks over there.
Yeah.
But
that'd have been really cool. And I hate we didn't get into that on video. That happened so fast. We weren't ready. Yeah. And I ain't gonna lie, that was the first time we had hunted on the ground like that in forever. And we looked like rookies. I mean, we had, we'd got in there so early. We had so much time to clean her out from under her feet and everything. Yeah. And
we didn't do that.
But we had deer coming all around us. I mean, all around us.
And if I'd have seen that doe, well, if it didn't roll where she was.
Yeah, because I missed that other deer.
Then if I could have seen her whole body, then she would have calmed down. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have had to shoot her because she was like, she came up over that roll. And you said something because you had seen that doe that was up the hill and she had been in there. She didn't know he was in the world.
That deer was just slap feeding on
Blackjack acres. Yeah,
coming down the hill.
And so I like looked up to see where Carson was talking about and a deer blew. And I thought it was like way to my left because of the roll in that hill. But she was actually straight in front of us. If the roll in that hill wasn't there, then I would have known where she was at and she would have calmed down. But she caught me moving all the way to the left like I was going to see something over there. And then it took me 5 minutes to find her, and by that time, you know, it was just like, all right, come on up here where I can see, you know.
Got to do something now. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We definitely got to do that again this
year. Just that was just.
And I tell you one thing, guarantee, kicking it old you can write this down and put it on the refrigerator. I'm going to hunt on the ground, or I'm either going to hunt on the ground across, both of it's going to be across the street from where that took place. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm either going to be on the ground that first place I found, or I'm going to be in that poplar tree that we found when we took Brentley hunting. Mm-hmm. But Evan Reese is going to be hunting over there this year.
If ain't no, and I'm going to talk about this real quick. I ain't going to dive on it forever. If people would do it more where it's legal, because I will say North Carolina, matter of fact, I'm pretty sure we're the only county you can't do it in North Carolina, Cabarrus County. You can't hunt on the ground with a firearm.
I don't think you can in Mecklenburg either.
No, but anyway.
Not that many people hunt Mecklenburg, but
if you ever
get
a chance to do it, bow or firearm, hunt on the ground one time. That is an adrenaline rush like no other.
Oh, yeah.
That is wild. When you're eye level with deer, and I'm talking, I've done it in the Midwest. Here, not so much.
Yeah.
But when you can do it in the Midwest, and I'm talking deer walk by you like close and have no clue you're in the world, son, you can talk about your heart racing.
Even, I mean, sitting, you know, just like old school, like would you back up against a tree, but even like, a ground blind or like that box stand we got that's on the ground in the mountains, like it's a whole different feel. Like when I shot Del Rio out of the box stand that's on the ground, and like it was just a whole nother feeling as if I'd have been up in the
air. Because the part, and I think I'm trying to explain this to people, when you get up in a tree, the topography changes and you're like, oh, that ain't that steep or that ain't that shallow. When you get on the ground, dude, your range of distance shrinks tremendously.
Yeah, you standing up, it's like, oh, I need to sit on that tree. I can see all the way down there. You sit down, you can see 50 yards.
Yeah, and it's like crap. And so there might be deer just right under your nose. It brings back turkey hunting in my aspect. And that's why I've always heard from old guys, good turkey hunters end up being good deer hunters because you know how to slip and slide and kind of wait it out for a minute.
And vice versa, very good bow hunters are usually good turkey hunters. Because you have to be close. And you're, I mean, you know, most of the time you're bow hunting from the tree, but you still got to be close.
Yeah, get that distance. Get that distance.
You pay attention to the land more.
But, let's see. We have about 53 minutes now. I was going to talk about this anyway. I thought about this before we got just all down rabbit holes. And all this is, guys, just a bunch of deer talk. I mean, I do want to talk about this thing because we'll go to – once we start doing some stuff, we got a video we got to put up anyway of Evan doing some stuff.
I was going to talk about that for a second in a minute.
Well, you can if you want to, because what I'm going to talk about is just a whole completely different topic. So
But, yeah, this is back to the first topic. But if y'all saw an Instagram story 2 weekends ago, I didn't put none on there this weekend. Me and Dad are doing a big habitat project in the mountains. Long story short, the food plot we have is like 2 acres now, the 2 acre opening. And I'll explain all this in the video and you'll be able to see it, which will make a lot more sense to me talking about it. But in like the 1950s, it was a 5 acre cornfield. And then gradually, you know, it just got overtook by trees. And then in the 80s, the guy that had it then just kind of kept the 2 acre part open. So like he didn't have a food plot in it, but it was just kind of like a hay field or whatever. So there's trees. Some places it's 10 yards wide and some places it's 60 or 80. But the dirt berm where they pushed up the original 5 acre field is still there. And it's all just little junk trees between there. It's all shaded out. There's no bedding. There's no browse. There's no nothing. And so what we're doing is we're cutting from the edge of the food plot to the berm, and we've got a it's actually a really cool company I found. I don't know if I talked to you about this on the phone the other day, but they're out of Wisconsin. It's called Hale Habitat and Seed, H-A-L-E. I highly recommend. I have never heard of them, and I was just Googling stuff the other week, and we found them. They have got some of the best native grass, wildflower, any kind of grass blends that I've ever seen, you know. So we've got a bunch of their product. We got some Mossy Oak Whistleback stuff from Green Cover Seed. They're another really good company. It's called the it's called Indian Grass Perennials. It's got all kind of blue stem and all kind of stuff in it. And there's another one. I didn't even know they made seed. You remember that old show, Bucks of Tecumatty? It used to come on Outdoor Channel. Well, they got a seed company. It's like Tecumatty something. But they've got, like, they call it like a quail blend or whatever, but all kinds of native grasses and stuff like that. And I'm actually going to try to transplant some briars from down across the road and just kind of let that take over. But basically what we're doing is making a huge buffer around the food plot for rabbits and turkey nesting and fawn and cover and all the good stuff and lots more browse. So that's what we're going to be doing.
That was odd.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
We got Nat Geo playing over in the background. He's a bighorn sheep. What do you call them things? Ewes or something, I guess?
A yearling bighorn sheep with a big chunk taken out of it.
Of his back.
Yeah.
I think I've seen this one, though, because that one gets, it don't make it back up the hill. I think I've seen this before.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway. So that's what we're going to be doing. And then another spot we got is like an old hay field, and it's just a bunch of fescue and a bunch of hay grass, no broadleafs, no bugs in it, no nothing. So I actually sprayed that, and Lord willing, it's supposed to be somewhat dry up there this weekend. I sprayed it the other week, and I killed it, and I'm getting pushed for time, but I'm just going to plant it because it's perennial, and hopefully it'll come up. But this Sunday, I think I'm going to be able to go up there and bush hog until it'll be dry enough. And then I'm going to run back over with that cultipacker and kind of pack that seed bed back down, and then let it sit the next week. And then the next weekend, hopefully I can be up there and plant it and then just drag here to cover that grass seed up where that'll be just a big stand of native grass and stuff. So there will be a video coming out on that. I didn't even make a video this weekend because it was raining, and we just did a little bit here and there and did a bunch of other crap we didn't think we was going to do. But anyway, I am going to be making a video of that. I'll probably make the video Sunday because I'm not going to be doing, like, too terribly much work. And so yeah, be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, that's because I'm going to, once I get started doing my stuff around here, I'm going to do it because I finally got some free weekends up, so I'll be in the same boat. But what I was going to talk about real quick to change subject, we can probably wrap up on this too if you want to. Setups for this year, and we'll try to do one of these after every conversation we talk about if that's not what the first thing is brought up. You hear that?
Yeah.
I don't know what's making that noise.
I don't hear it no more.
Yeah, I don't either. It was making it in my ear.
Yeah.
I hope y'all didn't hear that. That sounded terrible. Oh, there's nothing in here. Okay.
Something anyway, in the headphones.
Yeah, I heard it. It was weird. It was in mine. I thought it was my headphone. But anyway, setups. Let's talk about it real quick. What you're using, archery-wise, equipment, arrows, broadheads. And we'll just talk about that for a minute. And then, like I said, after every week, you know.
We'll talk a little bit about
equipment. Yeah, kind of what we're going to do, you know. Stand hunts and you know, the saddle
that'd
thing.
Be good. I think we should do that, have like a little equipment
a breakdown, because I mean deer hunting's a little more extensive than turkey hunting, so some people are kind of interested in what we do because we are different to each other. We don't do a lot of stuff the same, so
yeah,
I'll let you take off and then I'll jump on.
Yeah, 2 years ago I bought a Hoyt, or no, that's a lie, last year, this will be my second deer season with it. I got a Hoyt, I'm going to say it wrong. No, it's an Alpha X.
Yeah.
Because I used to have the Alpha Max, which was a 2012 or 13 model bow. The Alpha X is basically a new version of that. And this is where we're different, but I'm a big Hoyt fan. I've always loved holding the weight, you're not holding the whole weight, but not as much let off. You're holding a lot more of the weight. It's just all one, like, big smooth. There's no jump. I like the way they feel better in my hand. But so yeah, that's what I'm shooting. A Hoyt Alpha X. I shoot 70 pounds. And then
what's the ATA on that bow?
It is 30.
That was a long one. Is it 33 or 31?
No, they make a 33 in it. I think mine's a 30 or 31.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Because Hoyt don't put the numbers on them like Matthews does. I know they make a 33 version. I think mine's the short version, whatever it is, 30 or 31.
Yeah.
And then I shoot, like I said, I shoot 70 pounds. I shoot two different – I hear it again.
Yeah, I don't know why he keeps doing that.
I don't know. Anyway, I shoot 340 spine Easton full metal jackets. I've always loved those arrows. Now, everybody claims, you know, they're not tack drivers. They're not blah, 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 blah. No, they're not tournament arrows. They shoot extremely accurate enough for deer hunting, and they punch a lot harder. They're extremely tough arrows. I don't break near as many arrows as I used to unless it's something after it goes through the deer. I ain't broke a full metal jacket in a deer yet, you know, just by something happening. Yeah. I shoot two different types of broadheads. I shoot the Slick Trick, Raptor Trick, which is a two-blade. It's the old one. Actually, I shoot three. I just lied. I shoot the Raptor Trick by Slick Trick, which is a two-blade. And last year I started shooting the Torch, which I was extremely impressed with. Yeah. A couple does I shot with it. And I also shoot the Ramcat fixed blades, all 100 grain. I don't weigh my arrows or do no build arrow setups. I just, you know, stock arrows, whatever they come as, and then 100 grain tip. I don't have no weighted tips or nothing. I ain't never been – I love bow hunting. I mean, everybody, you know, claims I don't. But I absolutely love bow hunting. But I've never been that big into it, like, you know, to go all out in equipment and stuff. I shoot those three broadheads. The Ramcats, my dad started shooting them in Kansas several years ago, and he had some 100 grains, and then he was building some arrows and went up to 125s. And so I just took, like, an old pack of – I don't even think it was a whole pack. I think it was two Ramcats. And they are the most accurate fixed blade on the market. I'll argue that with anybody. They're extremely consistent. They're very – because that's what you get with fixed blades a lot of times. They're not as consistent, and they're not as accurate. Ramcat, they're weird. I took the foam out of my quiver, so it don't matter, so I keep my Hoyt quiver. But, like, Dad's got a Ramcat quiver on his bow because that's all he shoots. They're weird, but they are very effective. That buck I shot 2 years ago with it, or 3 years ago, I shot him with one. So that's three broadheads I shoot. And then I've got, on the bow, I've got a HHA, the new, it's the single pin sight, but it's the one that's got the pin in the middle of the post.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you roll it to 20, it's whatever, tape you have on yours, it'll be different for everybody's. But, like, on my tape, so, like, if I've got I keep my pin set at 25. And from 31 or 2 to 0, I don't have to hold no different.
Yeah.
That's the way I've always worked it in my mind, because most stuff I shoot is going to be 30 couple or less, you know, so I don't have to move my pin in a crunch or anything. But for that instance, I keep my pin set at 25. So the second – it's not a second pin. It's just a dot in the middle of the post.
That's right.
And there's another indicator on the tape. And I think that second pin on mine, I'm tape number like 36 or 37. I don't even know why I remember that. But that's my tape sticker, if you got the whole pack of tape. My second pin is like 40 or 41. I've never had to use it, because if I'm shooting something that far, then I'll just roll my pin or whatever. Yeah. But it's a very good backup plan. I really like that sight. And then I got a Hoyt quiver. I really like the Matthews that started doing it with that new one. You got the integrated sight system.
Yeah,
Matthews, it goes through. Hoyt, they put a Picatinny rail on it where nothing's hanging out on the quiver side of the bow.
Yeah.
It's all in line. And so I really, really, really like that.
Yeah.
with the sight mount, and then I got a Tacticam quiver because I got a Tacticam.
Yeah.
So nothing fancy down there. I don't have no fancy. I just said Tacticam quiver. I meant stabilizer.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I don't do nothing crazy with that or whatever. I shoot some 3D tournaments. I ain't shot none this year. I love doing them, but
yeah, we had to go I wanted to shoot that one Bigfoot one, but I had some stuff to come up that weekend. I couldn't.
I didn't feel like losing $14 arrows.
No, that was a little. They said that was
wild.
It was
a little excessive.
Yeah.
I talked to Todd. He was still shooting, and I thought he was done, so I didn't get to talk to him. But I called, I called him, and he was with Jamie and them boys. And I said, I called him, and he was like, "Hello." And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm still shooting." I was like, "Oh." But I didn't want to mess with him and talk to him a bunch. I said, "How many arrows you done lost?" Five. And then he's like, "All right, well, I'll let you finish shooting, but I don't know how many they all lost total, but
a bunch, but probably." Yeah, they know
down. I didn't go down there for that.
Yeah.
But that's my archery setup.
Yeah, so I
and a 20-year-old Scott Archer release that was my dad's.
Yeah, ain't nothing wrong with that. I used to shoot Hoyt. I had when the RX series first came out, I had an RX-1.
Yep.
And I shot it for a couple years, and then I switched. I made the switch to Matthews, and I had bought a V3X. I hadn't shot one of those since they had come out with that Youth Mission series years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the switch, shot it, and I shot my V3X. Killed a lot of my big deer with my V3X, and I love that bow. And when I got it, I had made a switch to something that it led into what I got now, you know, part of the hunting deal. When I had it, I started experimenting with forward and rear stabilizers for weight, you know, balancing the bow, trying to, you know, hold shots and, you know, just get more stable in your shooting. So I dabbled into that a little bit, and I had some stuff from Custom Bow Equipment that I had on it. And then the same thing I carried over when I got my Lift X, and also I'd switched to Victory Arrows from Victory Archery, shooting those RIP TKOs, I think is what they're called. Yeah, I got some on that bow right there. I just can't remember. But I switched to those, and I think they're 350 on the spine.
Mm-hmm.
And I shoot 100 grain broadheads. I shot Rage for a long time, and then I bit the bullet and switched on my own because, again, I was just shooting kind of the same crap dad shot. Mm-hmm. Tried the fixed blades, couldn't get nothing to fly right, didn't want to build much arrow stuff. This year I may dabble into doing some builds, but I doubt it. Anyway, I switched to G5, and I shoot the dead meats or the mega meats. You can't hardly get the dead meats no more. The mega meats are still pretty hot, but I ain't had an issue out of none of them. They shoot really, really good.
Yeah.
The three blades, and they're good. They're good broadheads. But my new setup, that was just kind of where I fell into place. I stayed with Matthews again, and I upgraded to a Lift X. Again, wasn't a whole lot of big change on how people are buying bows, but Lift X was a big jump for me from the V3X, night and day, because I didn't buy into the Phase 4. So I got the Lift X. I got that B real grip on it from Chris B. He's got that newer style grip. I had switched over stuff like that, you know, working on the grip. Still shooting the Victory Airs. I dropped my poundage, too, with my V3X, doing some experimental stuff, because I really was trying to get my form down.
Mm-hmm.
100%, you know, because I switched to a thumb release. And that was another big thing when I bought, when I went to Matthews. I switched to a thumb release and was trying that stuff out. I flipped back and forth between a thumb and a wrist, and I really committed to a thumb 110%, but I switched between that True Ball Spitfire one and then my UV button. And I like my UV button. It's nice. It's just, for me, it's still a conscious thing when I'm hunting in the woods, you know, to have it on me and not lose it. But anyway, I dropped my weight. I love the integrated stuff, the inline stuff. So I've got the forward and rear stabilizer on that bow. I love their setup, the way Matthews does it. It's super nice. Thumb release by UltraView Archery. Victory Arrows. Like I said, I'm thinking about experimenting with some other ones. But I'm shooting those because they shoot really good. They shoot fast, and they shoot good and flat. And then I bought into it. I wasn't going to do it, but I did. I got that Matthews UltraView Bridge Lock sight, the UV slider sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something. I come off the HHA Tetra,
yeah.
Single pin tournament, Tetra, the tournament style. And it's just as good, if not better. I love the speed adjustment on it. I mean, it's super, super nice.
Yeah.
I get it. It's overpriced for deer hunting, but it's a slick setup. And matter of fact, I'm sitting here looking at them now in the corner. I need to get them out and start shooting.
I need to do the same.
But they that was my setup. So I did my weight last time. I'm sitting here trying to think because I didn't want to not tell nobody because you said 70 pounds on the nose. That bow's limbed at 70 pounds, but I think I've got it turned down to about 65, 64.
Yeah.
I toned it down a little bit so I can work on my form. I'm not saying I can't pull 70, but, like, I tried to get it where muscle memory was the same draw cycle every single time because, again, I know when a deer comes in, you can't be perfect, but, like, when I shot that one deer out of my saddle this past year before I had the Lift X, having that down pat with that lower weight and the perfect draw cycle, you can just draw, you know, and it's not a – you don't get kind of paranoid because I'm going to tell you that comes into play a lot.
Yeah, whatever
in the
weight –
heat of the moment.
Like, I mean, I know everybody on podcast says this. Like, Ted Nugent shoots 45, and he shoots, like, 100 or 200 animals a year.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about shot placement and waiting for the right shot. You need to shoot whatever
–
like, my old bow, I shot 65, and then when Colin ordered that new bow for me, he's like he's like, no, because Hoyt, I think, makes a 60-pound or 65 and then a
70-pound.
And he said, do you want to stick with 65 or you want to go to 70? And I was like, well, I can go to 70. And
you can train yourself
to
shoot
that. Yeah, you can train yourself to shoot that is what I said. It's all, it all needs to be what you're comfortable with and what you can do, I guess smoothly is the best word.
Correct.
Like where you're not flailing around in the tree.
Yeah.
Like it don't matter what you do in the backyard. Like you might think, oh, I can pull back 90 pounds. Well, I can too.
Yeah, but in the heat of the moment, can you be staring that deer down
and go straight
and draw
back
real smooth and then shoot? And that's
no
the thing. I mean,
sudden anything or anything.
Yeah, that's a whole other rabbit hole. I mean, because it's.
Yeah. I was just saying
you're right.
We were talking about poundage. So shoot whatever. I think legal limit in North Carolina's, I think, is 35. But. You know, you get over 40, anything north of 40 is going to kill an animal if it's close enough and you wait for the right shot behind the shoulder.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is just work on that form. I mean, when you're out here in the backyard,
don't get complacent.
Yeah,
if you get tired and start slinging the draw back, then just go in the house.
Yeah, stop shooting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you need to worry about your groups. You need to worry about your shot placement. But don't forget, you're shooting flat-footed 20, 30, 40, 50-yard shots.
Exactly.
When you really need to do it, do like me and Evan do. Climb up in a tree, put a deer stand up, move that target all around the yard.
Yeah.
Get in your saddle, you know, go all around the place and shoot. I mean, give yourself multiple scenarios. Shoot weak side shots more than you do your good side shots. Because once you get to shooting your good side shot, you know how your good of a shot are. And building that confidence is good. But when it gets time for that weak side shot and it's a buck of a lifetime, you're going to be able to do it?
Yeah.
Because I ain't going to lie.
Exactly right.
When even I've had these situations, I've been able to draw and get on it, and all of a sudden the deer gets over on my strong side, and I'm like, whew, thank God I could still do that, because if he wouldn't have moved, I'd have to shoot him on my weak side.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I didn't have that chance or didn't practice that, I'd have let it go, you know? So, but, yeah, that's the setup. I'm shooting Lift X, 65-pound, roughly somewhere in there. I think it's actually a little lower. It might even be 63. But Victory Airs, like Bevan said, mine are – pretty factory. They got outserts on them because they're a thin shaft.
Yeah.
But I don't have no forward weight, none of that crap. Yeah. I ain't trying to bust shoulder bone or nothing like that. I'm shooting them behind the shoulder. I'm double lunging them wherever they give me that chance. So, yeah, that's the setup for the year. I love that bow, though. I keep looking at it. It's a dang nice bow.
I like how we both got the tan bow, too.
Yeah.
I really like that.
I'll never go back to a black bow or a camoed bow. I can't stand colored as well I want to be. I want to go OD green. Or tan. And that's a new color, too.
I will say,
color.
The Bottomland.
No, that was slick. I ain't
going to
lie.
I doubt Colin listens to this. I don't know if he does or not. But I did laugh because I went in there to get some arrows. Or no, I didn't. I went in there to string at recurve. My old recurve, it was my grandpa's. I went in there to get some new string for it. And I didn't even know Hoyt started making a Bottomland bow. And I was like, man. I said, I'm leaving. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, I don't even want to look at that because it's a slick-looking bow, but I'm the same way. Other than that, then I'm just a straight color.
Yeah, me too. I had that when I bought the
Even art. A black bow with some cool string looks good. Like, I don't know. It's just like there's not enough metal on bows anymore to make a random camo pattern look good.
No, because like when I had my RX-1, It was in that stupid Under Armour camo. God, it was ugly. It was the bow they had, the bow I wanted. I didn't want to wait, so I bought it. I mean, I was younger than I am now, and I was like, I got to have it.
Yeah.
But, man, that thing was hideous. It looked like bleach white, you know? Looked like an aspen tree bark or something. Yeah. And I'm over here hunting in pine thickets with an aspen white-colored bow.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dad's got a jet black one. You know, his was jet black. But he switched back to Hoyt, too, while we're talking about that. He went back.
Yeah.
He's got that, what is it, the Ultra? Or not the Ultra.
It's the carbon, the new carbon, whatever they're calling it.
Whatever Michael
I think it is the Ultra.
Or whatever.
The RX Ultra.
Yeah, whatever it is. But he likes it. He loves that thing.
It's a slick looking bow.
He's in there. He's got arrows. He's built some arrows.
Yeah, Dad got into that too. Yeah. I don't have the time. If I really cared, I'd have the time.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to say this, and we ain't got to go down no deeper than this. Dad started doing it, and I've been around him a little bit when he shot. Back when he was still shooting, he ain't shot a whole lot since then. But he just got some new ones refurbished up coming out of the
turkey season. He switched them 5.0s.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you what. For somebody who used to just swear by the book, knew what it took to be an old school bow hunter, and guys, we're going to talk about that as these go on. These guys are old school for coming from, I'm talking about bows that slapped like 22 rifles, shooting aluminum shafts to what they shoot now, they know their stuff. Dad is like dialed in now. Yeah. I mean, like, He's a force to be reckoned with.
Oh yeah,
I mean he's got him a setup now. Like probably one of the best he's ever dove into in his life. Used to it was he wanted to shoot the best factory era, and he just wanted a good fast bow. Now, he don't care if the bow's fast and what it draws. He wants a good arrow that shoots the same flight consistently. He's Robin Hooded more arrows just in my life than recently than I've ever seen him do in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like tack driving. And he and his favorite thing now that he gets tickled about, and he'll never do it because he's not one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
He can shoot long distance now more than he ever could because the setups are that critiqued. And he's shooting.
It makes a big difference.
I mean, he's got a forward and rear stabilizer. You know, he switched. He said, I don't ever thought that matter. I said, I'm telling you, when you get to doing some stretching. On a bow, I mean, that'll really work it out. Mm-hmm. But he's still old school, you know, sub 30, he wants to shoot a deer. But
he said
if a 200 hung out at 50, he feels confident now he could poke
him
if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And with the way the setups are now,
I'm the same way.
It can ethically be done, but I don't recommend it.
I felt more comfortable with that because I shot a 2013 or whatever it was, Alpha Max, and I love that bow. And I went to Grafton's every single year and shot the new Matthews, the new PSC, the new Bowtech, the new Hoyt, the new Diamond, the new Elite, the new Bear. I shot them every single year. And Colin probably hated it. I don't really know or care. But, like, I'd come up there and shoot every year. And then I'd leave. I was like, ain't none of them. I don't like them. I don't like any of these better than my Alpha Max right now. And it's a 12-year-old bow. And that Alpha X, and I literally, Colin set it down. It was Nathan and Colin in there. He sat it down on the counter, and I shot some tournaments with Nathan, and he knew I shot that old bow. And he set it down on the counter and was putting a D-loop on it, and he said, you going to buy this bow? I said, nah. I said, I've been coming up here for 6 years. I said, I ain't thinking about it. I just wanted to come shoot it. And sure enough, I shot like 3 arrows through it. I said, yeah. I said, order me a tan one with orange strings.
Go ahead and saddle her up.
Yeah. And I have been more comfortable with that bow. I shot 3 does with it this year. And I've been fortunate to shoot a lot of deer with a bow. Those 3 does is the most confident I've ever been.
Yeah.
I mean, without a doubt, it is. And, like, the morning I saw Del Rio, and, you know, he was out there at, like, 90 yards, and I've told that story, like, 3 times on here, I think. But, anyway, if he'd have got down there at about 50 or 45, I was fully comfortable on opening day, well, you know, without even shooting a doe or knocking the rust off, whatever people say. I was fully confident to shoot him at, you know, 40 plus. You know, I ain't going to sling nothing. I ain't going
to
shoot nothing at 60.
Yeah, 40 to 50 yards.
Yeah, 40 to 50 yards. I was comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've ever been
there. I know that raggedy Tacticam video you had, you know, wasn't the clearest in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, after some of them first couple ones you took, I was like, old boy's got him a bow now. He's confident, real confident.
Oh,
I mean, you killed some before you showed me, but, dude.
Oh, yeah.
We got to get a camera on Evan now. He likes to shoot that bow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was goring them up everywhere he could.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the next thing, too. Going into deer season this year, we're probably going to do those. I did talk about this in turkey season a little bit. We're going to probably pump them deer videos out as they come, more than likely within the week or so of them. And we're going to try to go through some videos – I'm gonna post some stuff of kind of how we set up, what our setups are, because
we can do a video. I'll bring my bow over here one evening too. We'll shoot them and do a video.
Yeah, we'll do that, and then I'm gonna also do a video kind of on setups with the tree arms and everything, because I really want to get you on a where you can film yourself this year.
Yeah, I know.
If I don't go with you, because nobody said it, nobody will say it. I don't care if they do, but unless I'm with him to film him, like I don't want the YouTube channel to be all about myself, you know, just because I'm filming myself more than he is, yeah. But. We got GoPros, we got Tacticams, we're going to get them all up and running this year, so we're going to have some good third angle views. Again, this ain't going to be no cinematic masterpieces, but we're going to give you mm-hmm. all the angles where you can see all the emotion, what yeah. we're doing in the time of watching the deer. You know, you're going to have an angle of the deer while he's moving, and then you're going to be able to see me draw, kind of like some of them I did this year. You're going to be able to see that, but I did all that with my phone. I got a GoPro now, so, you know, we're going to be able to have that. And for you, you know, you'll be able to have the Tacticam and another video running.
Yeah, I need to get a GoPro or something.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's the tidbit information, Bose, mm-hmm. what we're looking forward to this year. So, yeah, I'm kind of getting pumped up for deer season, really. I usually don't
get this pumped up, but we've been doing that habitat stuff, and then that old...
Yeah, that just works you.
That old split brow showed up the other day on that new mineral site.
Yeah, I saw that.
I sent you that picture. Nice deer. Now, that amped up the feelings.
I got a good one. Yeah, I sent you that one. I got a real good one, too. Oh, yeah. That eight-pointer. Nice looking buck.
It amped up everything.
And on top of that, we'll leave on this note. We've been seeing an exceptional amount of poults across the state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
I got 3 poults on my property with two hens. And I couldn't be more tickled. If I never kill a turkey ever again on that property, I don't care if they just come here to have poults and raise them, because that's what I want. Yep. You know, I've seen a bunch at work. I know you've seen a bunch around.
I've seen a bunch the other day.
So that's a plus.
And Kale, I haven't seen none on our land in the mountains because we've been doing so much, and the hens don't really nest there anyway. But they're going to next year. But when Kale came up this weekend, he came in from down the road, that farm we used to turkey hunt.
Yeah.
And there's a big low field down there, and he said he seen a bunch of poults out there in it. He couldn't count them. They went in the woods, but he said there's a gaggle of them. So that was really good.
Good old gaggle of turkeys.
And I'll say this, too, because this podcast is going to come out before they vote. Call your senator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care if 27 people listen to this, all 27 of you.
Yeah.
Call your senator, email him. I emailed him this morning. I'm going to call him tomorrow. Tell him to vote no on the reconciliation bill, whatever number it is.
Yeah, I can't remember the
number. I'll share something on my story every day about it.
We need to preach on that. If we're going to use this platform for anything, it's going to be for that, for conservation and preservation of what we all pay and want to keep.
Yeah.
Because I ain't going to lie, that post on X-Bade is just absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
We all got a spot. We may not want to share it. Some people know where it's at. Some people don't.
Yep.
And we do. There's a chance that you could lose that just like that.
And the problem with it is the people that are pushing it, is it has let 3 million acres, which is a great thing to be able to say because we have so much public land in this country, the 3 million acres is less than 1% of the public land in the country.
Correct.
So they're saying, oh, well, it ain't that big a deal. And this is coming from me. In the grand scheme of things, it's probably not. Like, they could sell that 3 million and never tell the media.
Correct.
And none of us would ever know unless, like, you've physically been to that one little tract of land. But the problem is the principle of it.
Yeah, once that starts,
that
ball's going to keep rolling.
If we don't fight back now, 20 years from now, when they want to sell 15 million acres, they'll be like, well, back in 2025, nobody cared. Exactly. What they going to care now? Yeah. So, everybody exactly call your right. senator and tell them to vote no.
Yep. Don't get too derogatory with them. But.
Yeah. And Onyx and, like, that email I sent this morning was on the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation website. They've literally got a prompt. You put your name in and your zip code and your email, and so they can know what senator to send it to. And it is a prompted thing, and you put your name in it, and then, like, you can type a little bit of extra stuff, but everything's said for you. It's just the numbers of saying.
It's you signing and stamping that you do not agree.
I took the effort to send this to you.
Correct, with not the selling of public lands.
Yes.
So, go out there, do your part, because I'm telling you, when you don't, I don't want to hear nobody crying and complaining. So, let's save these public lands while we got them, because I want my kids and I want their kids to be able to appreciate what I got to appreciate.
So it sets us apart as America.
110%.
It's because... You know, 80 or 100 years ago, all the politicians wanted to be different, you know, from the rest of the world to say, you know, we have all this beautiful land. So do your part to keep it.
Yeah, because, I mean, and I'm going to say this, and then we can cut it. It's just like all the national parks that got lost. Mm. It'll be the same way. When they don't deem it worth anything anymore, they'll let it go. So until you say something about it and you stand up for what you believe in, it'll be gone.
Yep.
So do your part, because we're going to do ours. But we're going to wrap this thing up. We'll see you guys on the next one. Yeah, we'll keep them going. If y'all like these little talks, we're just going to talk. We literally have not a list. We just rambled.
We're literally sitting on the couch. Yeah,
we're just going to keep having hot topics and stuff we're doing, and we're going to bring them to the table.
So we need to be more consistent, too. We can do this like
every week we just sit
and talk.
We're going to try to drop one every week. So,
because I'm going fishing Saturday. I talked to him today. I said, I'll tell it on the podcast tonight in case you win it. But the big tournament, the big catfish tournament on Tillery.
Oh, yeah. It's like 20 grand. When he posted that one with the big fish, he said, I hope she comes back.
Yeah, because that's the record on Tillery. He holds it. And so, I mean, he knows where he caught her. But what I was saying is, be on the lookout. Old Big Noah might win the tournament this weekend.
We'll see old Noah.
But, so we fishing, doing everything. So.
Yeah. We'll keep it up. So, we're going to let this one out of here. I'm Carson.
I'm Evan.
We'll see you on the next one.